Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on building a self-pay operation. Whether you call it self-pay, early out, extended business office, revenue cycle management, whatever, there are more and more collection agencies are expanding the products and services they offer to reach a broader swath of the healthcare industry and meet the demands of their healthcare clients. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts in this very area who are here to share their insights and strategies into how to build and grow a self-pay operation. This webinar is being generously sponsored by VOAPS. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform, my mother tells me. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Tracy Dudek is the Chief Operating Officer for State Collection Service, responsible for overseeing the organization's production and support areas, including the company's extended business office and third-party collection divisions, as well as patient engagement, business intelligence, client services, and human resources, among others. Tracy has been involved in the receivables industry for more than 20 years. She has been instrumental in enhancing the technological tools that put State Collection Service ahead of many others in the healthcare receivables space. Additionally, she has played a key role in the growth of State Collection Service's multiple locations. Tracy is regularly asked to speak at conferences around the country. She's a member of the Healthcare Financial Management Association. She earned her bachelor's degree from Marquette University and holds fellow and scholar degree from ACA International. Pam Kirchner is chairman and CEO of BCA Financial Services. She's been employed in the ARM industry for more than 40 years and was a member of a task force assembled by HFMA and ACA International to develop consensus practices to bring clarity, fairness, and consistency to medical account resolution. She is currently a member of ACA International's Board of Directors, serves on ACA's Council of Delegates, and numerous ACA committees, advocates on behalf of our industry on Capitol Hill, participates in ACA's Committee of 100, and has earned her ACA Fellow and Scholar designations. She volunteers her time to the board of her local unit, the Florida Collectors Association, and has served a term as unit president. Kelly Maloney is president and CEO of the Charleston, South Carolina-based CAB Business Development Center. CAB was founded in 1955 and has a background in third-party debt collection, extended business office, and customer service. The company sold the debt collection division in 2017 to FDS of Wilmington, North Carolina, to focus on the EBO and customer service area. The company provides extended business office services to hospitals and physician groups. Customer service operations are focused on identity theft, technical startup, and internet-based sales support. Kelly attended Clemson University, where he obtained a BS degree in administrative management. He joined the CAB Receivables Management Company in 1984. He is a former instructor with the American Collectors Association. He is a past president and national director of the South Carolina Collectors Association. He is a recipient of the International Fellowship of Certified Collectors Certification. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion with our panelists, moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. A recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, today's event is an audio-only event, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. With that, let's launch into today's discussion. Pam will give you the honor of the first question. Let's talk about setting up a self-pay operation and the right way or the best way to do it. Should it be set up separately from a third-party collection agency operation?
Thank you, Mike. Good afternoon, everyone. So to answer your question, Mike, I would say yes, it should be set up separately from a third-party operation and for a variety of reasons. I think I'll touch on maybe some of the operational reasons, and then maybe either Tracy or Kelly might want to touch on the legalities of it. But you know, from my perspective, and I'm going to call, for the sake of ease, extended business office, early out, all of those names, I'm just going to say EBO.
Sounds good.
A robust EBO program really requires a significant amount of customization, technological, you know, resources, and somewhat of a different mindset than third-party operations. You know, in early out, we focus primarily on, you know, providing excellent customer service, with collections being a byproduct of your improved communications and your patient education. You're acting as an extension of the business office. It's meant to be seamless to the patient. So you definitely don't want the same staff members who might be contacting the patient acting on behalf of the hospital to later contact that same individual identifying themselves as a debt collector. So, you know, in my opinion, you need separate staff, you need a separate company name. And then as far as the staff itself, you know, we find that what makes a successful, you know, EBO, a patient account rep, does not necessarily make a successful collector. So when we're looking for EBO staff members, you know, we're looking for those who have, you know, strong customer service skills, high social comfort, high energy. Whereas for our bad debt collectors, we look more for staff members who score high in assertiveness, goal orientation. So it's to me, it's a completely different ballgame. And then from just touching on the, you know, the legal perspective of it, it's the difference between, you know, working accounts, non-defaulted accounts versus, you know, defaulted accounts. So it's very different with the rules and regulations, and I know we'll touch on compliance later. But then maybe turn it over to Tracy or Kelly. You want to touch on whether that should be a completely separate organization, et cetera?
Tracy, you want to go ahead? I do have some thoughts.
Sure, I'll be quick and then you can follow me.
Super.
We have our EBO operation set up separate than our third-party collection, similar to what Pam described, for a lot of those same reasons. We also operate on different systems for our early out and third party collection operations. But as far as a separate legal entity, we debate this a lot. We do not run our EBO as a separate legal entity. So our company name is State Collection Service, and we have two divisions in our organization, our third party debt collection and then our EBO operation. We have decided to keep those both divisions under the same legal entity, because at the moment we don't do a lot of separate financial reporting, and we do so much support administratively that supports both sides of the operation, that it was our thought we may not want to devalue one side or the other by splitting up those two into separate legal entities. Go ahead, Kelly.
Awesome. Hey, y'all, it's Kelly from Charleston. I'll talk a little bit about the legal side, because ironically, I have a retired appellate court judge that I don't say he works for me. I give him an office and he comes in because he doesn't have anything else to do, but he's always giving me advice. And when he first got in here, he was really always berating me that I had the whole company under one umbrella. He was really encouraging me to carve it out and separate it, mainly from the liability. As everyone on the phone knows, the collection agencies are exposed, third-party debt collection is exposed dramatically these days with lawsuits and potential lawsuits, whereas the early outside has a whole different genre of issues that we deal with, and the liability is much less. So from his perspective, which I agree, but I didn't, as you can imagine, it's hard to unwind the company at that point. I think if I was starting out today and I had a large, let's say I got a large EBO project, I would really encourage you to look, you know, I think just like Tracy said, really explore the benefits of carving out that company separately. For just a couple things off the top of my head, A, again, liability, lawsuits that might bleed over from the other side, but B, also is that revenue, because the revenue that you generate on the EBO side will, if it's all one company, that all goes into the one basis for such things like insurance. I mean, that can, in my personal operation, I had a lot more revenue coming from my EBO side that caused my insurance, you know, really affected how much liability I was having to pay, because as y'all know, it's a revenue-based model. So that made more sense to have it carved out. Now, it's hard to carve out companies sometimes once you're already established, you've been going. But if, you know, I know the notion of this webinar is somewhat about starting and one up, and I would really consider it as you're starting out if you had a large deal to get going.
What about if it's too late, Kelly? What about if, you know, the company's already, you know, they've already started a self-pay operation, you know, even if it's just sort of getting off the ground or if it's been in business for a while, you think it's too late to try and carve it out at that point?
Well, I can tell you, we have been in business since 1955, and he was telling me to do it all the time. So, you know, it's not. I think it's really just, you know, lawyers have their perspective on things, and then you have operational perspective and ownership perspective. And I just, you know, it's just kind of a pain. It's expensive. You got to start, you know, new banking accounts and the employees have to basically work for a different company. I mean, there's a lot involved, and we were just weren't up for the task. I made it easy for him, though. I sold the collection part. So that way he was happy. But
I'm sure
I think it can be done. It's just, there is some positives that are out there. You know, Tracy said they explored it. So it's definitely worth exploring.
Well, and so this is Pam. You know, we've certainly explored it. And at the end of the day, if a plaintiff attorney wants to get to you, they're going to get to you. And if you have the same ownership in both of those companies, regardless of the name, and even in the state licensing, you know, the questions that they ask. So there are pros and cons, but, you know, it's hard. And I agree with you, Kelly. It's a difficult task. And at the end of the day, is it worth all of that? I'm not sure that the three of us.
I didn't think it was, and that's why I didn't do it.
Right.
Okay. Let's, you know, again, from the perspective of starting up or sort of ramping up an EBO operation, as we'll call it for the purposes of this webinar. Tracy, are there particular areas of sort of EBO, because it does encompass a lot of different services and products, is there a particular area that a collection agency should focus on when building a new operation?
Well, for us, we've seen the most growth recently in the self-pay follow-up. I know that may be the most, traditional area of EBO, but taking the accounts receivable, the self-pay after insurance has been adjudicated, and doing the follow-up and making sure that statements are sent out and inbound calls are answered and outbound calls are made is the area that we have the most of our early operation doing, as well as that is our area of largest growth. There's ancillary services in insurance follow-up and some, you know, texting and messaging campaigns and financial assistance follow-up work that you can do. But we found that the self-pay follow-up and leveraging our staff to make and handle the inbound and outbound calls has still been the area where we're finding the most need from providers. I don't know if Pam or Kelly are seeing something different.
No, so Tracy, we see the same thing. And I think that the ultimate goal, right? So we all want to receive, you know, day one placements to include, you know, straight self-pay, self-pay after insurance, and really provide an all-encompassing solution, right? So we want to be able to send out the statements, you know, take their inbound calls, make their outbound calls, and then all those other things like propensity to pay, you know, the presumptive charity, those are kind of all add-ons. But I think that, you know, in most cases, before a hospital is outsourcing the EBO, what they're doing is they're sending out statements and they're fielding inbound calls. That's about all they're doing. They're not making outbound calls. They don't have the staff and they don't have the technology to do so. So if you're going to start out, right, and you really don't have the capability to customize statements yet or do any of these other things, I think just assisting hospitals with making outbound calls is a good place to start. Because if they can send their statements and they take their inbound calls, then just going in maybe to one of your existing clients and say, hey, I know you're not making outbound calls on these. How about if I start making some outbound calls at day 30? Just to kind of, you know, get your foot in the door and get comfortable with EBO, especially if you've never done it before.
Yeah, excellent points, ladies. These, man, y'all are all over it. You know, when I started, my first hospital was in 1999. We did their EBO, and back then, it wasn't that prevalent. Today, of course, you'll see probably if you're starting from scratch, if you have a hospital client you're doing their collections for, if they're not doing an EBO, well, there's a great opportunity. And as y'all said, I mean, all the revenue is generated by the calls. I mean, as you can imagine, as y'all know, the hospital bureaucracy generically is not adept at outbound revenue generating at day 31 or whatever. And that's where we come in. And, you know, the only person that's mad at me is the collection agency, because I'm going to come in and start contacting these patients as a customer service call. You're generating a much, much higher, especially I'm in South Carolina. My collection agency, you know, the recoveries in South Carolina are very low. We're not a garnishment state. So for me, being able to get in there and start recovering revenue from my client at day 30 or whatever is generating a lot more revenue than I was in the collection side of it. So the area, though, the hospitals are obviously, many of them are doing it now. Most of them have probably done it or had a bad experience or good experience. I'm seeing new opportunities. We're seeing more in the physician groups. They're not as inundated. So if you're starting out and your hospital already has a couple EBOs or they've already done it and they're not interested, you're seeing any group that's generating enough volume, you know, is an opportunity to start a smaller scale EBO. We're doing some physician EBO follow-ups, very high recovery. They're excited because they don't have the people to even take. I have one physician group, they were doing automated calls, and they called me and they go, Kelly, we can't even take the calls that are coming in. So there is, as the ladies said, the generic option of taking calls for them because they can't handle them is a great way we see to get your foot in the door. And another area, I had a friend of mine from out west come out and kind of look at how we did it. They've taken our healthcare model and gone out and done a significant business with some credit unions, going into the credit union. You know, it's really all the same thing. You're contacting a consumer early on in the process where there is the highest potential to generate some revenue. So he's doing great with that model in that industry. So we're seeing it kind of move over into some non-healthcare entities.
Kelly, you made a really good point with the large physician groups. What we have seen is that these, you know, physician groups obviously are growing and growing and growing, and they absolutely cannot handle the inbound calls. I had a group call me 2 weeks ago and tell me that their abandonment rate was 50%. 50%. So
that's crazy.
Jump right in and assist them with reducing that abandonment rate. So I do agree with you. I think that, you know, as an industry, especially if you're really focused on hospitals, you kind of look at the physician groups and say, oh, the balance is too small. And, you know, how is this going to make sense? But at the end of the day, at the right rate, it can make sense.
Definitely. You know, one of the things we're doing in physician world related to the rates and the balances that you were just discussing is we do some alternative pricing. So we'll do a production rate, you know, where I'll put five people on the floor on the phone. They didn't want a commission rate. They thought it got too confusing to pushing accounts around. We put five people on the floor just answering their calls. And then it kind of evolved into, all right, we're going to send the second letter. Send me the second letter file. And instead of sending the second letter automatically, we start calling off that second letter. So you can, you know, there are some alternative ways to price it if it gets squirrely on the, you know, you think the balances are too low or the client doesn't want to do it. The bottom line is when you're a, you know, abandoning those many that many calls. It's a horrible customer service experience. And you know, that when I first did this, the CFO looked me in the face and he said, this is, you know, how many years ago, he said, I don't care how much money you bring in, if I get complaints, then this deal's off. And of course they do care how much money you bring in, but the complaint side to me is, you know, I'll take anything. But when I, and we knock on wood, we just don't get many, but boy, you, that's when you go run into the hills, is that complaint. That's the, so it's just a kind of whole different mindset.
Excellent. Well, at this point, I want to pause the discussion for just a minute and say a few words about VoApps, the sponsor of today's event. VoApps Direct Drop Voicemail is happy to be sponsoring today's webinar. They want to thank the panelists and AccountsRecovery.net. VoApps has been a trusted partner of hundreds of ARM industry companies for more than 5 years. The Direct Drop Voicemail service delivers a voicemail message to a consumer's mobile voicemail without making a call to the mobile phone. Whether it is intended to drive calls to a call center or direct patients to consumers to an online payment portal, the non-intrusive nature of receiving a voicemail leads to a higher response rate. VoApps clients find that when consumers elect to call or log on when they know to whom and why they are responding and elect to with resolution on their mind, the interactions are better and result in more dollars collected. VoApps Direct Drop Voicemail appreciates the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Well, on behalf of everybody, I want to thank VoApps for sponsoring today's event. And let's pick up with our discussion. Kelly, I wanted to circle back to something you said a little while ago. You mentioned something, you know, with regards to the opportunity in the physicians group, generating enough volume. That seems kind of subjective. And I'm wondering if you could try and provide some sort of context or some measure about how you can sort of figure out what enough is when you're talking about enough volume.
Oh, great. Great question. I mean, you know, a lot of I'm often reluctant to turn business away. However, we do get into some deals where they'll come and say they want maybe two people. And it, obviously it's when you have two employees helping a client, really you got one, because one of them is probably always doing something, you know, half the time they're not there or they're
right.
It just makes it really hard. So what we try to do is to get into a scenario where the volume is going to generate, we're looking for five or so FTEs. I actually have one that I have three employees doing. And, you know, a lot of it, Mike, is just kind of, you got to get a feel for the business once, obviously they'll tell us what, you know, how many accounts they have and all those kind of things. But you just kind of got to get a feel for it, because one of the problems in our business is that, I'll just give you a quick scenario. I had an EBO client. I charged them 8%, and somebody else said, well, I'll do it for 4%. And I'm like, well, I'll do it for 2%. I mean, it's really all about how much resources you put into it. And I'm sure the ladies would agree with me. I mean, you can do an EBO. Some of them aren't EBOs. They're pre-collects. That's a whole different. You know, so it's all about how many FTEs. That's my biggest expense. And that's where I'm going to generate the results. And so we really try to, you know, we have so much experience from the collection side. But for example, you know, my smallest EBO probably they're probably turning over 2 million a month in referrals, kind of just to give you, and I have three people, I think, on that one.
So it comes down to a function of the number of accounts.
Right.
Okay.
But the problem with that client, you know, I don't want to bash clients, but there, it's not a true EBO. I think it was Pam said, and initially there's so many different ones. This one they send their first two letters out. So then they get all those calls. To me, that's not an EBO. I'm getting it at 60 days or whatever, as opposed to my best client, my largest client, I'm getting them day one, and I'm taking all the inbound calls from all the letters and handling everything for them, you know, the whole shooting match. And it's a better experience, I think, for the customer. And I'm generating better revenue, because there's this smallest one I told you, they send a couple letters, and you know, the bill's already aged by the time we start calling.
And I'll jump in on that one too, just for a second here, Kelly. Our smallest early out listing client is about $250,000 a month in placements. And you'll say like, wow, that's real small. That's a rural hospital. What we've found is that we have a nice core group of about 7 to 10 of those rural facilities that give those smaller listings in that, you know, $200 to $1 million a month range. And what we had to do is carve out a team that specifically manages those clients. Obviously, you're in the client systems, and so access is important, and not all of those clients use the same system. So you have to have a group of real technical individuals to manage. You know, we've got a group of about 12 people that manage that, what we call the high volume clients or high tech clients. And they have to learn a lot of client systems, but we carve that out from the rest of the larger EBO work where you have 20 to 50 people working one specific client. And that's the only way we found to make it work. We used to struggle in managing an EBO program that only needed, you know, a half or one or two FTEs. But when we pulled them together and realized that they can be profitable programs, but you do have to have some real talented or senior people working those because they have to know how to navigate so many different client systems so that they can all be on each other's inbound routes, and so you don't have calls going to voice. So I think it can be done with the smaller clients. It can be profitable, but you have to manage it differently than those larger groups.
Excellent, excellent point. That's a great way to do the smaller ones. If they're similar, you know, similarly based, similar type business, it makes it feasible.
And right. And Kelly, I agree with that. I think the difference here is that, Tracy, we have something very similar, but you mentioned like hospitals and rural hospitals. And I think the difference between your smaller physician groups and your hospitals is the average balance. And so we look at the average balance, and you know, if you have a, you know, a standalone physician office, or they have a couple of docs in there, I don't think you can do an EBO program. The volume just simply isn't there, unless you were to have a complete, the same type of thing, Tracy, that you just described for your, you know, rural hospitals and your smaller volume, to do the same thing, I guess, in the physician side of it. But the problem is that the customization in early out, right? So just the build alone, building out your computer system, you know, building all that customization in there for these smaller clients is very difficult.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reporting. I mean, and one big difference from my collection agency world and to the EBO world is reporting. I mean, the hospital CRMs are great for hospital CRMs. They're not often very good at giving great information back. My EBO clients look to me to be the guy bringing in the information monthly, and we spend a lot of, you know, that's one of the questions, that time, effort, expense. We spend a lot of time and a lot of effort reporting because they're not getting it, and it's really valuable information for CFOs, the PFS directors that we're bringing to the table.
Absolutely.
We started down this road, which is great because it's kind of the next thing I wanted to talk about, the time, effort, and expense that goes into building a self-pay operation. I know we've kind of hit on sort of how you manage it with respect to clients, but I'm curious if we're looking sort of from somebody who's either just getting started or is really sort of seriously considering jumping into these waters, what kind of advice can you give them in terms of the time, effort, expense that it's going to take? And maybe Pam, you can take this first.
Sure. So I think that Tracy mentioned having two different systems. And so to me, that the big ticket item here is you have to have an information system that can handle the customization that's required in an EBO program. You have to have a system that's, you know, flexible, completely customizable, with import-export capability, dynamic reporting, like Kelly just said, because I agree totally, reporting on the bad debt side is completely different than reporting on the EBO side. And then the ability to interface with your common healthcare system, such as Epic, Cerner, MEDITECH. Also, you're talking about some large scale implementations that can take up to like 90 and 120 days and really require like a project management software, a project manager, you know, gathering all this information from your healthcare client and getting all that into your system, getting that information out to your training department for them to, you know, build training modules, you know. As we already discussed, if you're a bad debt agency or third-party agency only, I think you really need to look at additional staffing. You need a completely separate training program. I know we'll get to this, but the compliance knowledge is, you know, really different. And so then if you're talking an all-encompassing program, some of those other things that we talked about, you probably need to develop relationships with, you know, companies who are going to provide you some propensity to pay data that are going to help you with the customization of the patient statements, presumptive eligibility scoring, you know, building payment portals. So, you know, it's pretty significant, you know, amount of time and expense, I would say, that especially, you know, starting from scratch.
What I've seen on our end is it's really important that you have a really good IT person, because as y'all already know, when you go into a hospital, their IT, my God, they're pulled in so many directions. They look to my IT resource to be the, you know, to lead the process. And so you have to try to take some of the burden off the hospital IT people and have a guy or girl that knows what they're doing. And the other area that, you know, in the bad debt world, we don't worry too much about is insurance and denial management. And you really, if you're going to start one, you probably want to hire someone or get some people on staff that know insurance. And because that's hopefully, I mean, that's what I want to do when I get EVO, is do some insurance. Cause there's a lot of money in the follow-up and there's a lot of holes in our clients' follow-up systems. Just give you one example. I have three people on a project. All they're doing is small balance follow-up because the hospital doesn't even mess with these accounts. So there's opportunity there, but IT and insurance, I mean, and it is overwhelming. And listening, I think to Tracy, that is overwhelming, all the stuff. And I guess we started, And that's what I would say when you start, as we alluded to initially, you weave your way. At least that's how we got started. We started doing the calls and all of a sudden I'm like, well, hey, let me do that. Let me take over the denials instead of sending them back to you to file, we'll file. And as you proceed, because it is overwhelming when you sit down and when you chart out a project on all the elements of a full blown EBO, there's a whole lot to it.
Yes,
I'm curious. Yeah, go ahead, Tracy, and then I'll follow up.
That's okay. I'll be quick. Both Kelly and Pam mentioned the statements and payment portals, and I want to underline that because it's important as you're deciding what type of EBO program you're offering and whether you are going to offer sending statements or if you are purely going to manage inbound and outbound calls. And the statement management process has complexity to it as you work with your different statement vendors. We found your traditional third-party collection letter vendor may not necessarily be the best source for your EBO statement management. So, that's a different world, and there's many design elements and interface requirements depending on the system that statement is being produced from. I know we work with a lot of clients that are on Epic today. You know, there's many systems, but Epic being predominant. And if we're going to offer statements to an Epic client, we need to be able to provide PDFs that are going to be hosted on a MyChart page, which is the Epic-sponsored payment portal, or some way for the patient through the client's portal to view that statement. So it's a very big process, and we found a happy in-between between not managing statements and then us managing everything about statements, particularly for Epic, is to still allow the client to send the statement file, but for us to manage the ancillary, a broken promise or payment reminder letter, and for us to send those files to the statement vendor, manage the look and feel of the statement, but still use the data that comes out of Epic. So that's I would say a newer way for us to work with a client that wants the statement coming from their system and wants you to manage the process, but you're not going to be the source of the statement data. So that part is complex, and then it ties to what payment portal is being used and what online visibility the patient has into their account, and different healthcare systems offer different services. And then some of your providers might use an add-on, or they may ask you to provide that payment or portal and statement viewing option. So you really have to decide whether you want to be in the statement business or not. So thanks for letting me add that.
Crazy. Excellent.
We're doing the same thing with the whole Epic. We're actually getting the PDF out of Epic and then handling the printing of that. But the one thing that you haven't mentioned, and I know that this must be as much of a pain point for you all as it is for us, is when you get into that OCR scan line to process payments through the bank and the testing with the bank, that is a nightmare within itself.
Right.
Yeah, Pam, I don't do, just on my EBOs, I have, none of my EBOs do I handle the money. The ones I do are all go directly to the client. That's just how we've always done it. So
yeah, we do that too. But what our clients want us to do is print an OCR scan line on the bottom of the statement, so that when that
I see what you're saying. Okay.
And getting the data elements and, you know, the methodology, the formatting of that scan line, and then the exact location of that scan line on the statement. I mean, you're talking the location has to be absolutely 100% perfect, and then testing it with the bank. And, you know, you're trying to go live in 60 days and the bank is telling you that it's going to take 8 weeks for them simply to test the statement. So it's just it's craziness.
Right. So when you're quoting an implementation timeline, if you're going to do statements and you need to test with the bank, your implementation will, for us, we quote a longer implementation when we're doing statements.
Yes.
Just because of all the reasons you said, Dan.
Okay. I'm curious, we've talked a lot about the operational side, of setting up an EBO. I'd like to, you know, sort of look at it from a different perspective, and that's the sales and marketing side. How do you go about sort of, you know, selling these services or promoting these services to current clients or to new clients? And Tracy, I was wondering if you could take that one first.
Sure, absolutely. When we first were starting in the EBO work, we did sell EBO business. Our first client was to somebody that we had a longstanding third-party debt collection relationship with. You know their portfolio. You tend to have a good proven relationship with the client, and they had a need, and we had a desire to create a new part of our business. And so that all worked out, and that was, you know, a long time ago. But yes, we would advocate working with your existing clients, because that's where you have the relationship and you're probably having a deeper conversation about what their needs or pain points are. I'll just comment that we do attend trade shows and conferences, and we feel that we get good value out of them. You get out of it what you put into it, and I know some of them are expensive, but you do see your existing clients, and then you get an opportunity to meet and talk with folks. And just this week, we're finally getting a presentation with somebody who we met at the very first HFMA MAP meeting we went to in 2013. And so, you know, is that good or bad? There have been other, you know, other prospects that we've sold from that meeting in between, and others that, you know, just haven't turned into anything. But when you plant those seeds, they take a while, some of them. And we know that it's typically a longer sales cycle for us anyway in early out than it is in bad debt, but it really is about the need that the client has at the time.
So I 100% agree with Tracy, and I think that the place to start is with your existing clients and meeting your existing clients, you know, at least monthly or quarterly, to hear about their pain points, understand what their needs are. But from a completely different perspective, talking about, you know, like the expos, when you're selling simply third-party collections, right, and your bad debt, what we found was that if you had a booth, you didn't have as much traffic as you have when you're talking about something that, you know, hospitals, you know, large physician groups. You know, the big thing is patient engagement, right? That's the buzzword now. So from an early out perspective, more traffic, because, you know, everybody's talking about how do I improve that patient engagement. And from an EBO perspective, you really have the ability to do that. You have the ability to change that patient's perspective. And you can sell that. And you can sell that, to me, a bit easier than the third-party collection piece of it.
Yeah, excellent points. I mean, our EBO business came from existing bad debt clients when we got started, and now it is exactly like Pam said. I mean, we're coming in. I mean, it's really a lot easier to come in. I hate to say it, but oftentimes hospitals kind of categorize third-party agencies as, oh, it's a necessary kind of evil of parting of doing my business, and I got to stick it over there somewhere. And this area is customer service, and there's so much opportunity to help them and consult. And a lot of what we do is consult and looking at their overflows and going through the calls and, you know, best practices and these things. And I don't sell it. It's just totally different. So we really go after, we get a lot of referrals, and it's just so much different from how we went about when I was selling my third party business.
Sorry, just catching up on my notes here because there's so much good stuff. Okay, so let's talk about the current climate. Kelly, would you advise that now, you know, is a good time to start a self-pay operation if they haven't already?
Oh man, listen, I think definitely. I'll put it to you this way: my client would tell you, or what I hope they would tell you, is that I'm their best department. You know, I'm the guy that's going to get it done in their department, because when you're doing an EBO, you're on a different, at least my experience, it's a whole different participation with the client. It's much more engagement. I am like a department there, and we're constantly communicating, and the meetings are different. I mean, everything, it's a more fun experience. And I'll tell you a shocker, I've had EBO clients give me raises. You know, how many times in bad debt world did anybody ever give you a raise? And because you have such an opportunity in the EBO world, and we haven't even discussed all the back office stuff that they need done, all you got to do is read Becker's report. I mean, they have to cut back on FTEs. And I think it presents big opportunities for us in the EBO world, because they got to get the work done, you know, somehow or another. So I think if we can be there for them, you know, I think it's just a better, that's one reason I sold my collection agency, because I really enjoy the relationships much more with my EBO clients.
Well, and with patient responsibility now accounting for 30% of healthcare revenue, now is the perfect time, right? Because there's no way. There was a survey done by NThrive, which said that 43% of hospital administrators feel that their organization is not adequately prepared to handle the increase in patient liability and consumerism that we now know is in healthcare. So they're looking to their vendor partners to help them. As we said earlier, they don't have the staff, they don't have the technology. So where are they gonna turn? They're gonna turn to their vendor partners. So in my opinion, now is the best time. It's an opportune time.
I'm finding, well, I agree with both of you. It's a great time to be in the EBO business. And I saw a question come in related to pricing, and I think it fits this conversation because I find that the early out clients, you get a lot more data from those clients, and they certainly do view you as a partner, but they're willing to share a lot about their accounts receivable because you're handling everything from day one. And so with that good data, you can get current recovery trends. You're looking at your split of self-pay and self-pay after insurance and government payers, and you really get some good information that helps you price an EBO program a lot better than bad debt, in my opinion. I know when you get an RFP, you get some limited information, but when you're truly in a partnership conversation with somebody who's considering an EBO program, you are becoming their business office. And so, you know, you're a big part of their budget. And when you are going to price, you have to build your own pricing model. And that requires a lot of information from the client that I think they're willing to share. And so we use contingency fee models, and there's other times that we'll do a per account or a per FTE rate for certain programs, but we're highly contingency. And the other thing I would add to today's climate is we're seeing more prevalence of incentive programs based on the recoveries or customer service measures of average speed to answer calls or keeping an abandonment rate under a certain level. And so beyond your traditional contingency fee, you can usually get some incentives built in because the provider wants the protection that their patients are going to be handled, you know, with kid gloves. And so those incentives will also give you just a financial reward if you're able to get some of those key measurements that give the client the peace of mind that you're handling the calls well. So I think it's really right now our climate is a spirit of partnership, and that's why the EBO programs are growing. The providers need the outsourcers' help because it's hard to hire people. And I guess we've all become good at figuring out how to hire people and use the technology to get the work done with less people.
Excellent. The only what I would add to what Tracy's saying, all great, fantastic points. Don't underestimate the value of the scoring. I mean, it's uncanny. You know, we've all done the bad debt scoring. You know, I guess I would say with mixed results in my agency on that. And although that all always generically reflects probably fairly accurately in the EBO world, I have one client that they invest in the scoring models, and it is uncanny how accurate they are and how much that drives some of our processes, and you know, it really helps. I mean, it is so much more of a partnership where you can, you know, have discussions on. I have one client that says you're going to have X, you know, for this rate you're going to have X FTEs. I mean, and you know, so they want. Now, y'all going to run into them. We run into people. They don't care. They want the lowest rate, you know. And so in that world, it's a whole different ball game. But with scoring, that gives you a real good tool to see how much money is out there. And the other thing Tracy said that kind of I'm start just banging my head on my desk is the self-pay and self-pay after buckets. I mean, you know, the money's coming. Everybody wants a good straight self-pay follow-up, but the money is coming from that self-pay after bucket. And as Pam said, I mean, just in the last 5 years, I think it's what doubled the patient, you know, responsibility. And So that self-pay after bucket's going to tell you where your money is. And, you know, I've had these rural hospitals that are 80% straight self-pay, and man, it's hard. It's hard to, because your recovery is so, so low compared to the, you know, I have one client, we might collect 8% of the straight self-pay, and we're doing 50% of the self-pay after. So scoring and bucket analysis is big tools.
Right. And so we find that we end up getting in conversations with a serious prospective client about our model, and we didn't pull a number out of the air. We have some bureau data. We have data that comes from the client. We've got scoring information. We've got similar portfolios. And, you know, you just, I guess it's hard to get to that level of description when you're just answering an RFP. So back to the sales side, as much as you can be having those conversations before an RFP comes out, or be working with someone to just avoid the RFP process altogether, then you're on more of an even playing field. But I think if you get a chance to, you know, if you're called in for a visitor presentation and you can show your services, that you don't have to be the lowest price organization around, as long as your net back is there. And so I would say, don't be afraid to price it where you need to, because that's where, you know, what your pricing model tells you needs to be, and be willing to have the conversations about the client. Sometimes you'll learn things that aren't requirements, or new information about a portfolio that will allow you to adjust the pricing down usually, but sometimes up. And then you can have a good business conversation about that. But when two people want to work together, usually there's a way to make it happen.
I'm curious, before we get to some of the questions that have come in, and we ran out of time. If you're a healthcare agency, or you know, that's really kind of been focused on third-party collections, can you survive in this sort of new healthcare world if you don't have EBO, you know, an early out or an EBO operation today? Or can you still make it if you're just doing third-party collections only? In healthcare?
You know, I would say, yeah. I mean, what I ran into, Mike, in all honesty, is I think there's a good niche for third party only because of the compliance. I mean, what I found with all these different businesses we were running, it's so easy. Collections require, you really got to be on top of that compliance, or all of a sudden you're just in a world of hurt. And so for the guy that's out there and that's all they do, you know, I think there's a, because it is so compliance driven now, I think there is a market for that. I just found it's a lot more fun. I mean, you know, I was in the collection business for so long. I mean, you know, I know we all grow up dreaming of being bill collectors when we're little kids, and I had done it for so long, I was ready to try something else. So that's why I really had more fun. To me, it's more fun, and that means a lot to me.
Well, debt collection is one of the oldest professions, and in my opinion, it's not going anywhere. Having said that, I don't think there's any other industry that's dealing with as many challenges as the collection industry is dealing with right now. So I agree with Kelly. If you've got the stomach for it, it's a great place to be. The only thing that, you know, I would say about that is I'm seeing a trend with some hospitals that are trying to reduce the number of vendors that they have, and they're doing a flip-flop on an alpha split. So they're splitting, you know, the EBO business between two vendors, and then they're having those two vendors flip-flop on the bad debt side. So if you don't do the EBO, that would probably eliminate you from that model. But again, that's not, you know, every hospital's model, but, you know, I think debt collection is going to be around for a really long time.
In the last few minutes we have, let's see if we can get through some of these questions that have come in. Can you speak to the mechanics of a successful EBO operation? When you got started, how did you begin with phones ringing to your shop? Do you work with the accounts out of your system, or do you work in the client system? Which is best? Anyone want to take that one?
Yeah, let me just say this. You have to have, at least in my experience, you have to have the same access to the client's data that they have. And that was our very first. So if you walk to my shop, I'm on my client's, I have my client's computer, and we do download their, you know, for follow-up and for notes and for all the other, for dialing and everything, we download their accounts onto our CRM. But, I mean, as someone said in the very beginning, this transparency and the seamlessness is paramount or it won't work. You're selling their services, so we got to know everything they know, and that's where you run into trouble with some of these pre-collects where you're trying to collect in the client's name and you don't have all the account information. You can't explain to the patient what's going on. It really destroys the system, and that's all I'll say on that.
And I'll address the phone. So what we do is we get phone numbers in the area code and extension of our hospital clients, and then that's remote call forwarded into our office. There's a number of ways to do it. Some of our hospitals have a phone tree, and you know, part of their phone tree says, you know, if you've received a statement, press here, and then it gets forwarded to our office. And then as far as, you know, working in our system versus the client system, it depends. So we talked about EBO requires a lot of flexibility. We have clients that say, listen, we don't want to, you know, do the uploads and downloads. We want all of the work done in our system. And something like that, you might bill out at an FTE rate. So it just depends upon the situation. We do both.
And we do most of our work in our system, and then we reference and use the client's system. There, we may have one or two instances where we're on a FTE rate model and we're just in the client's system. We do work that way sometimes when a program is just starting. If there's a time in between one program's closing down and the next one is starting, we'll just use the client system. But we want the reporting, the data management, the dialing, the speech analytics that our technology brings. So right now we've been pretty firm about getting all programs loaded into our technology.
Okay. How open are prospects to sharing their historic data?
I think they're very open. Go ahead.
You go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, you can get the age trial balance, which is the main thing that you need, and then, you know, you can back into a lot of things from the ATB report, but you should be able to get the splits of the self-pay after in government, like we talked about. You should be able to get the current liquidation rates and be able to predict what your process should do to improve those liquidation rates. So we find folks to be very cooperative.
When I agree with Tracy, when it's not an RFP process. So when we're just having those conversations and we meet, you know, a healthcare prospect and we go in and we meet with them, we find them very, very willing. What I've seen in probably the last 10 RFPs that we've gone through is that there's your question and answer, right? So every single, you know, recipient of that RFP is going to ask the same question: what's your historic recovery ratio? In every instance, I've seen them say, we're not going to share that information.
I don't do, we tried some RFP EBOs. I just don't do them. I mean, that's, to me, that's the part of the market I'm not, I just made the decision I'm not going to do that, because it's so much, this is so much more of a different relationship to me. And as y'all both alluded to, when you're sitting down with them, they're willing. I've never had one that won't pull out the, dirty magazines, man. They'll give you whatever you want when you're sitting there in a consultative basis, it seems to me. But that RFP process, I'll leave that to some other folks.
Time for one last question. How are companies like Simply and Patient Co. affecting early out operations? Has anyone heard of those and have any opinions?
I work with one of my large clients, works with Patient Co. PatientCo, what I found is they have a lot of, what the clients like about them, in my experience, is their back office. As far as what they'll do is they take all those payments and they dump them in the client's bank account, and they take care of all that manual or that all that posting process, which the clients like. So that seems to be the biggest driver. Of course, they got the patient portal, like Tracy was talking about earlier. All that's part of their process. So for me, we interact with PatientCo just as the client does, downloading data. It doesn't hurt me historically at all.
Okay. Excellent. Well, we've reached the top of the hour. So before I let everybody go, I want to thank Pam, Kelly, and Tracy for their insights and their time today. This was a really great discussion, and I really appreciate them taking the time to share their thoughts, their insights with all of us. I also want to thank VOAPS for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.voaps.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the near future. A recording of this event will be posted to the site in the next couple of days. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.